Wait a moment, make sure that it is so, then move to the left leg. Imagine, if you like, that a factory whistle has blown and all the little people are hurrying away from work, leaving their machines, and going home to their leisure. Imagine that they have a good cooked supper ready. Hurry them away from the toes of your left leg, hurry them along up the instep, up the ankle, along the calf into the knee. Behind them the left toes and foot and lower leg will be completely relaxed, completely heavy, as if not belonging to you anymore. Get those people moving, get them up beyond your knee, get them up the thigh. Now, as before in the case of the right leg and the left leg, make your imaginary policeman put barriers so that no one may slip. 188. Back. Is your left leg completely relaxed? Make sure. If it is not completely relaxed, order the little people out of the way again so that you are left with the two legs as an empty factory with everyone gone home, with not even maintenance men left there to cause disturbance or noise. Your legs are relaxed. Now do the same with your right hand and arm, and your left hand and arm. Send all the workers away, send them off, get them moving like a flock of sheep gets moving in a hurry when a really good sheepdog gets after them. Your purpose is to drive these little people away from your fingers, away from the palm of your hand, away from your wrist, up your forearm, past the elbow, get them moving, clear them out. You want to relax, because if you can relax and remain free from all distractions, remain free from all internal buzzes and ticks and clicks, you can unlock your subconscious and then you can be the possessor of powers and knowledge not normally given to man. You have to play your part, you have to get those little people out of your limbs, get them moving, get them away from your body. Having got your arms and your legs completely, utterly relaxed, and left like an empty housing estate when everyone has gone off to the local test match, do the same with your body. Your hips, your back, your stomach, your chest, everything. These little people, they are a nuisance to you. Granted, they are necessary to keep life within you, but on this occasion you want them to take holiday away from you. Well, move them off, march them up along the silver cord, get them away from your body, get yourself free from their irritating influence, then you will be completely and utterly relaxed, and you will know greater ease within you than you have ever thought possible. With all the little people crowded onto your silver cord, and with your body empty, drained of little people, make sure that you have guardians at the end of the silver cord so that none of these little people may slip back and cause a disturbance. Take a deep breath, make sure it is a slow, deep, satisfying breath. Hold it for a few seconds, and then release it slowly, taking a few more seconds about it. There should be no strain in this, it should be easy. It should be comfortable and natural. 189. Do it again. Take a deep breath, a deep, slow, satisfying breath. Hold it for a few seconds and you will hear your heart going bump, bump, bump inside your ears. Then release it, release that breath slowly, slowly, slowly. Tell yourself that your body is completely relaxed, that you feel pleasantly limp and at ease. Tell yourself that every muscle within you is becoming relaxed, your neck muscles are slack, there is no tension within you, there is only ease, comfort and relaxation within you. Your head is becoming heavy. The muscles in your face trouble you no longer, there is no tension, you are relaxed and comfortable. Idly contemplate your toes, your knees and your hips. Tell yourself how pleasant it is to feel so relaxed, to feel that there is no tension, to feel that there is nothing pulling or twitching within you. Go higher, feel that there is no tension within your body anywhere, no tension within your arms, within your chest, nor within your head. You are calmly resting, fully at ease, and every part, every muscle and every nerve, every tissue within your body is completely and utterly relaxed. You must be sure that you are completely and utterly relaxed before doing anything further in the matter of self-hypnosis, because it is only the first or second time which will cause you any shadow of trouble. After you have done it once or twice, it will appear to be so natural, so easy, that you will wonder why you have never done it before. Take particular care this first or second time, go slowly at it, there is no need to rush, You have lived all your life so far without it, so a few more hours will not matter. Take it easy, do not strain. Do not try too hard, for if you try too hard you will make it easy for doubts and hesitations and muscular fatigue to set in. If you find that any particular part of your body is not relaxed, then devote special attention to it. Imagine that you have some particularly conscientious workers in that part of the body, and they want to finish some specific job on hand before leaving at the end of the day. Well, send them off. No job is so important as this upon which you are now engaged. It is essential that you relax for the good of yourself and for the good of your workers. Now, if you are quite sure that you are relaxed in all parts of your body, raise your eyes so that you can see that little neon nightlight, 190, flickering away somewhere just above your head. Raise your eyes so that there is a slight strain on the eyes and on the eyelids as you gaze at the light. Now keep looking at that nightlight, its nice, pleasant little reddish glow, it should make you feel drowsy. Tell yourself that you want to get your eyelids to close when you have counted 10, so count, 1, 2, 3, my eyes are becoming tired, 4, yes, I am becoming drowsy, 5, I can hardly keep my eyes open, and so on until you get to 9, my eyes are closing tightly, 10, my eyes will stay open no longer, they are shut. The point of this is that you want to set up a definite conditioned reflex so that in future auto-hypnotic sessions you will have no difficulty at all. You will not have to waste time with all this relaxing. All you will have to do is to count, and then you will go off to sleep into the hypnotic state, and that is the aim for which you must now seek to attain. Now certain people may have a few doubts, and their eyes will not close the first time at the count of 10. There is no need to worry about this because, if your eyes will not close willingly, then close them deliberately as though you were in fact in the hypnotic state. If you do this deliberately, you will be laying a foundation for that conditioned reflex, and that is a thing which is quite essential. Again, you want to say something like this, the actual words do not matter. This is just to give you some idea with which you can make your own formula. When I have counted up to 10, my eyelids will become very, very heavy and my eyes will become tired. I will have to close my eyes, and nothing will keep them open after I have reached the count of 10. The moment I do let my eyes close, I shall fall into a state of complete self-hypnosis. I shall be fully conscious, and I shall hear and know everything that happens, and I shall be able to order my subconscious mind as I want to. Then you count as we told you before, 1, 2, my eyelids are becoming very heavy, my eyes are becoming tired, 3, I have difficulty in keeping my eyes open, 9, I cannot keep my eyes open, 10, my eyes are closed and I am in a self-hypnotic state. We feel that we should end this lesson here because it is such an important lesson. We want to end it here so that you may have ample, 191, time in which to practice. If we gave more in this lesson, you might be inclined to read too much at one time, and to take in too little at one time. So, will you study this again and again? We assure you repeatedly that if you will study, if you will assimilate this and practice this, you will have truly wonderful results. Lesson 29. In our last lesson we dealt with the method of getting ourselves into the trance stage. Now we have to practice that several times. We can make it much easier for ourselves if we really practice, so that we can get into the trance stage easily without having to make hard labor of it, because the whole point of this is to save one hard labor. Let us also look at the reason for this. You want to hypnotize yourself so that you may eliminate certain faults, so that you may strengthen certain virtues, certain abilities. Now what are those faults? What are those abilities? You must be able to focus the faults and the virtues clearly. You have to be able to really conjure up a picture of yourself as you want to be. Are you weak-willed? Then picture yourself exactly as you want yourself to be, with a strong will and a dominant personality, able to get over your points, able to sway men and women in the way that you want to sway them. Keep on thinking of this new you. Keep the picture of this you steadily before you in much the same way as an actor, a star, actually lives the part which he is going to play. You must choose your full powers of visualization, The more firmly you can visualize yourself as you want to be, then the more quickly you can attain your objective. Keep on practicing, putting yourself in a trance, but always make sure that you are practicing in a quiet, darkened room. There is no danger in any of this. We stress that you should make sure that you are not interrupted, because any interruption, or any draft of cold air for instance, will cause you to wake up, cause you to snap out of that trance in a hurry. There is no danger, we repeat, it is definitely not possible for you to hypnotize yourself and fail to come out of the trance. To reassure you, let us take a typical case. The patient has had a lot of practice. He goes to his darkened room, 192, switches on the little neon light just above the eyebrow level, and composes himself comfortably upon his bed or his couch. For some moments he works at getting the body relaxed, free from stresses and strains. Soon he feels a wonderful sensation stealing over him, as if all the weight of the body, all the cares of the body are dropping off, and he is about to enter a new life. He relaxes more and more, leisurely reaching out with his mind to see if there is any muscle under tension, to see if there is any twitch, any ache, any strain anywhere. Satisfied that he is completely relaxed, he gazes steadily at the little neon light. His eyes are not pointed straight ahead but are inclined upwards somewhat toward his eyebrows. Soon his eyelids begin to feel heavy, they flutter a little and then close, but only for a second or two. They flutter open again, there is some moisture, his eyes are watering. They flutter and tremble, they close again. Once more they open, with difficulty this time, for the eyes are tired, the lids are heavy, and the person is almost in deep trance. Within a second or so the lids close, and this time they stay tightly closed. The body relaxes even more, the breathing becomes shallow, the patient, the subject, call him what you will, is in the trance stage. Now let us leave him for a moment. What he is doing in that trance is no concern of ours, because we can go into a trance ourselves and have our own experiences. Let us leave him in the trance stage until he has completed that for which he went into the trance. He was doing an experiment, it seems, to see how deeply he could hypnotize himself, to see how firmly he could stay asleep. He deliberately tried to set aside one of the provisions of nature, because he told himself he was not going to wake up. Minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes? Pass. The breathing changes and the subject is no longer in a trance, but is sound asleep. After half an hour or so he awakens feeling wondrously refreshed, more refreshed, indeed, than after a complete night's sleep. You cannot fail to awaken out of a trance. Nature will not allow it. The subconscious is like a rather dim giant, a giant with dim intellect. For a time you can persuade him anything you like, but after a time it dawns upon this dim giant that he is having his leg pulled. Then he, 193, snaps out of the hypnotic state. We repeat again that you cannot put yourself to sleep in any way which would cause you harm or even discomfort. You are utterly safe, because you will have hypnotized yourself and not be at the mercy of any other person's suggestions. We said before that a draft of cold air would awaken a person, that is so. No matter how deep the trance, if there is a change of temperature, or anything which might possibly in any way whatever harm the body, the trance passes. So it is that if you are in a trance and someone in the house opens a door or a window so that a draft of air comes to you, perhaps under the door or through the keyhole, you will be awakened safely, painlessly, and then you will have the trouble of starting all over again. That is why you should avoid drafts and disturbances. At all times you will have to stress the virtues that you want to acquire. You will have to stress that you are getting rid of the things that you do not admire, and for some days as you walk about you will have to actively visualize the abilities which you want. You will tell yourself time after time throughout the day that at such and such a time, preferably that night, you are going to hypnotize yourself, and each time you go into a trance the desired virtues will appear more strongly in you. As you go into your trance, repeat within your mind that which you desire. Just a simple, perhaps silly little illustration. Let us say that a man stoops, perhaps because he is too lazy to stand upright. Let him say repeatedly, "I will stand upright," I will stand upright, I will stand upright. The point is, again, that you must repeat this quickly time after time with no break in between, because if you do permit a break, friend's subconscious might come in and say, oh, you never tell the truth, you stoop like anything. If you repeat it without giving a break, friend's subconscious hasn't a chance. He becomes overwhelmed by the weight of words and soon believes that you stand up straight. If he does believe that, your muscles will tighten and you will stand straight just as you want. Do you smoke too much? Drink too much? It's bad for the health if carried to excess, you know. Why not use hypnotism to cure yourself? To save your pocketbook from the constant depletion of what are, after 194, all, rather childish habits. You have only to convince your subconscious that you dislike smoking and you will stop smoking without a single pang, without a single thought of smoking. People cannot give up smoking. It is a habit which is extremely hard to break. No doubt you have heard that time after time, a smoker cannot give up his pipe or cigarette, everyone tells you so, advertisements in the paper bring to your attention various so-called remedies for stopping smoking, stopping this or stopping that. Does it not occur to you that all this is in itself a form of hypnosis? You cannot stop smoking because you believe what you have been told by other people and by the advertisements to the effect that to stop smoking is almost impossible. Turn that hypnotism to your own use. You are different from the common herd, you have a strong character, you are dominant, you can cure yourself of smoking, or drinking, or whatever it is you desire to cure. Just as hypnotism, unconscious hypnotism, made you believe that you could not break the smoking habit, so, when you are aware of this, your conscious hypnotism can make it so that you never touch another cigarette. A word of warning, though, or might it even be called friendly advice? Are you sure you want to give up smoking? Are you sure you want to give up drinking or always being late for appointments? You cannot do anything until you are sure. You must be certain that you want to give up smoking, that you want to do this or do that. It is not enough to be a very weak man and say, oh, I wish I could give up smoking, let me tell myself that I will. Again and again until it sinks into your subconscious, you can only do that which you really want to do, so that if you more or less dare yourself not to give up smoking, then you will not give up smoking, you might even smoke more. Examine yourself closely. What do you want to do really? There is no one about, no one looking over your shoulder, no one peering into your mind. Do you really want to give up smoking? Or do you prefer to go on smoking, and is your statement that you want to give up just so much waste words? Once you are completely convinced that you do want a thing, you can, 195, have it. Do not blame hypnotism, or anything but yourself if you fail to get what you want, because if you do fail then it means this, and this only. Failure means that you were not really strong in your resolution to do this or not do that. By self-hypnosis you can cure yourself of those things which some people refer to as bad habits. Unfortunately we have never been able to discover what these bad habits were, so we can shed no more light on that particular subject. We will consider bad habits to include baiting your wife or throwing the iron at your husband or kicking the dog, swearing at someone without reason or getting drunk, and all these things can be cured so very easily provided one definitely wants to. Let yourself relax a few times. Take advantage of freedom from inattention to build up your own nervous energy. You can do so much to improve your health if you will only read, and reread this lesson and the one before, and practice, practice, practice. Even the greatest musicians practice scales and notes hour after hour, day after day. That is why they are great musicians. You can be a great self-hypnotist if you do as we say. So, practice. Lesson 30. Many people have the idea, a most mistaken idea, that there is something wrong with work. Many civilizations are divided into white-collar workers and those who get their hands dirty. It is a form of snobbery which should be eradicated because it turns brother against brother and race against race. Work, no matter whether it be brain work or manual work, is enabling to those who do it with a clear conscience and without a mistaken sense of shame. In some countries it is considered to be a disgrace if the lady of the house lifts her hand to do any form of work. It is thought that she should sit about and look pretty, and perhaps give a few orders now and then to show that she is the lady of the house. In old China in days long gone the upper classes, so-called, grew their fingernails ridiculously long, so long, in fact, that often they would have special sheaths to protect the nails from accidental breakage. The purpose of the long nails was to show that the owner was so wealthy, 196, that he did not have to do anything at all for himself. The long nails was proof positive of his inability to work because the lady or gentleman of the house, the wearer of the long nails could not even attend to his or her bodily needs, and had to have servants to do everything for him. In Tibet before the communist invasion certain of the noblemen, who should have known better, wore sleeves so long that they completely covered the hands and dangled perhaps 6 or 12 inches below the fingertips. This was to show that these men were so important, and so wealthy, that they did not have to work. The long, long sleeves were a constant reminder that they could not work. This, of course, was a degradation of the real purpose of work. Work was a form of discipline, a form of training. Discipline is utterly necessary. It is discipline which makes the difference between a crack regiment of soldiers and a disorganized rabble. It is discipline in the home which makes it possible for youngsters, teenagers, to be decent citizens when they are no longer teenagers. Lack of discipline makes for hordes of leather-jacketed young morons who are bent only on destruction. We mentioned Tibet as being one of the places where there were wrong ideas about work, but that is only among laymen. In the Lamaseries it was a rule that everyone, no matter how exalted, had to do menial work at certain stated times. It was, before the communist invasion, no unusual sight to see a high abbot cleaning a floor, cleaning up rubbish deposited on the floor by the lowest of monks. The purpose of this was to teach the abbot that things upon the earth were things of a temporal nature, and he beggar of today might be the prince of tomorrow and the prince of today might be a beggar tomorrow. Some point might possibly be drawn from the fact that many of the crowned heads of Europe and elsewhere are no longer kings and queens and princes ruling countries, but then one has to reflect that many of these former crowned heads and presidents have made very sure while they were still in power that they would have ample funds for when they were no longer in power. However, that is a digression. Let us state again that work, no matter what kind of work, whether menial or mental, is uplifting and never degrading when it is done with pure motives, and with the idea of service to others behind it. Instead of applauding those gilded ladies who sit and autocratically dictate to, 197, our paid servants while not lifting a finger themselves, we should applaud the servants and look down upon the gilded ladies, for the servants are doing something honorable, the gilded ladies are not. We heard a discussion quite recently, a somewhat heated one, about meat eating. Our own point of view is that if a person wants to eat meat, then let them eat meat. If a person wants to be a vegetarian and climb trees after nuts, then let them be a vegetarian and climb trees after nuts. It does not matter what one eats or what one does not eat so long as they do not inflict their often erroneous opinions upon others, who may be too polite to object violently. Man is an animal, no matter how much we disguise the fact with fine clothes and beautiful powders and hair dyes, etc., man and woman are animals, meat-eating animals too. In fact, the flesh of mankind tastes, according to all reports, something like pork. Many people behave in a rather piggish manner, so possibly that is quite appropriate. Cannibals, when asked about human flesh, say that the black man's flesh is rather sweet and like roast pork. The white man's flesh is apparently a rather rancid and sour affair, like a joint that has gone off. We suggest, then, that if you want to eat meat, do so. If you want to eat vegetables or grass, do so. But do not at any time inflict your own opinions on others. It is a sad fact that those who are vegetarians or health food addicts are often extreme in their views, as if by the very vehemence of their argument they will convince themselves. It seems to us very decidedly that many of these people whom we personally regard as cranks are uncertain that they are doing the right thing. They do not want to miss anything, but they do not want to be vegetarians themselves if they think that other people are enjoying meat. It is often the case with non-smokers. Non-smokers often resent greatly that another person shall smoke. They seem to think that there is something exceedingly virtuous in not smoking. Actually, it is just a matter of choice. Smoking, in moderation, probably never hurt anyone, but drink, intoxicating liquors, does harm people because it interferes with their astral. We say in connection with this that, again, if a person wants to drink and injure their astral body, well, that is their choice. It is definitely wrong to try to use any forceful persuasion to change the path of another person. 198. While we are on the subject of eating meat, etc., which entails killing, let us mention another point which you may find of interest. Some people say that one should never kill even an insect. They say one should never kill a cow or a horse, or anything else which has life in it. It makes us wonder if we are doing a grave ill when we kill a mosquito which threatens to infect us with malaria. It makes us wonder if we are doing a crime against the living world if we have an injection against any virus. After all, a microbe or a virus is a living organization. Should we, then, out of our sense of righteousness, stop trying to kill TB germs, stop trying to kill cancer germs? Are we great sinners in trying to find a cure for the common cold? In trying to cure any illness, surely we are taking life. We have to be reasonable about all this. The vegetarians say that we should not take life. Now, a cabbage has life, so if we tear a cabbage from the ground in order that we may eat it, we are destroying life which we cannot create. If we take a potato or a stick of celery, or anything else, we are destroying life, and as the vegetarian destroys life quite as much as the meat eater, why not let us be sensible and eat as the body needs meat? It is often stated that the good Buddhist does not eat meat, and we must hasten to agree that many Buddhists do not eat meat, and often the reason is that they cannot afford it. Buddhism flourished exceedingly in very, very poor countries. In Tibet, for instance, meat was an unheard-of luxury which could be enjoyed only by the richest of the rich. The ordinary people had vegetables and sampa. The vegetables, too, were a luxury. The monk, who was not addicted to luxury, lived on sampa and nothing else, but to make it taste better the leaders of the religion decreed that it was wrong to eat meat. Thus, people who could not get meat anyhow felt that they were being virtuous in not having meat. We feel that there is much nonsense written about all these things. The meat eater likes to have meat, well, let him. If the vegetarian wants to chew a stick of celery, let him have his celery as long as he does not inflict his views on others. In the same way, if a person does not want to kill an insect, and prefers to have his cancer virus or his TB germs instead of trying to get cured, that is his choice. We often get letters from people in great distress who tell us that such and such a person is desperately in need of help, of advice, and, 199, how can they hypnotize a person, or force a person to a different way of life? We never help in such cases, because we believe that it is indeed very, very wrong to try to influence the path of another person. In this course, for instance, knowledge is available. We state our opinions. We state what we know, but we do not try to force you to believe. If you are taking this course, then presumably you are prepared to listen to what we have to say. If you do not want to listen to us, it is an easy matter to close the book. If you are asked to give an opinion, give it, but do not try to force your opinion on a person, and, having given your opinion, let the whole matter drop because you do not know what the other person arranged as their path through life. If you are going to force a person to do something which they do not want to do, then you might be fixed with their karma. It might be an unpleasant karma, too. We want to say something here about animals. Many people regard animals merely as creatures who walk about on four legs instead of on two. People regard animals as dumb creatures because they do not speak English or French or German or Spanish, but then animals regard humans as dumb creatures also. If you were truly telepathic, you would find that animals do talk, and they talk far more intelligently than many humans. Some scientists, as reported in a recent edition of the Scientific American, have discovered that there is a language of bees. Bees can give very detailed instructions to each other, and they even hold conferences.